Look at that smooth fade. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. My name is Brock Dennis. This is where we simplify the good life.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living. And today, polo.
Polo. Like shirts, right?
Like Marco.
Yeah. There was something, I thought we were going to say something funny there, and it didn't happen, so nope. It's okay. Yeah.
No, we're just going to keep digging until we hit China now.
That's right, and pop out on the other side.
Yep.
This is Aaron Hand. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And Raggy.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for joining. You two are involved in the bike polo scene.
Correct.
Yes, both members of Portland Bike Polo here.
Excellent. So it's good to have you here. This is something that I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, and actually, I think I met a guy on a bike ride who said he was into bike polo. I took his phone number and said, oh, we'll have you on the show someday. And that was like 2 years ago now. So it did not happen.
That guy since moved to San Francisco.
Maybe.
Not surprised at all, actually.
So I'm hoping that this will atone for my previous sins, my previous omissions. So, yeah, thanks. Aaron.
Yes.
Oh, I'm
this, you did it.
This is where we're so
I saw you look at him and I was like, I'm just gonna play it out anyway.
That was
so
great.
I wanted to get it out of the way now so we didn't have to mess with it later.
I'm glad you did that.
Yes.
Mr. Flores and Mr. Hand. That's where we're okay.
We can do it that way.
Yeah. Mr. Flores.
Yes, sir.
You took some drugs and tripped balls.
I've been tripping balls all week.
Tell me about this.
The Friday before, I talked already, I think, about my diagnosis of having a ruptured disc in my back here. And so this last Friday, I went to a spinal specialist who looked at me more intimately and said, you've got problems.
Yeah.
And she wasn't talking about, like, you know, my relationship problems this
okay.
time.
Just talking about, like, physically, this disc of yours.
Yes.
Ruptured.
Yes. Actually, it wasn't as bad as I originally thought.
Okay.
It's not, like, a full rupture where, like, what I was imagining was, like, the disc is open and all the wires of nerves and spinal fluid is just going everywhere into my abdomen.
Like a little supernova inside your back.
Right. It's not happening like okay. that. So we're not doing surgery. Hooray. But in the meantime, we're just doing basically yoga and drugs.
Okay. Well, that's a great combo, right?
Yeah, I guess so. She just gave me a lot of painkillers. Nothing terribly strong. I'm not like taking like Vicodin or anything like that.
Okay. I like Vicodin, which is why I don't have it around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm on what's actually a nerve blocker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'm not going to name the drug.
Right. Because it's copyrighted.
Because it's copyrighted, yeah. And until Pfizer gets on their, you know, until Pfizer starts supporting us anyways.
So what if there was like a Napster of drugs if you just had to download like the data and like you went online.
Download the recipe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, and
here's how you make your own codeine.
Let's say, well, like 3D printing. Someday soon, there's going to be like a Napster or Kazaa of drugs where it's just like, all right, you have all the hard material in your little 3D printer cartridge and, you know, here's your drugs. And that's why it's so hard to get one. That's why they're so expensive. That's my theory anyways.
But anyways, this particular nerve agent I'm on, side effects include nightmares, hallucinations, and death.
Mm.
I got none
death
of those.
Is a side effect?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got none of those.
That's good. I'm glad you're
so
alive.
It just makes me really imbalanced
when
I walk, or even if I'm standing still, I feel like I'm on a boat.
Right. So what about when you're on a bicycle?
I'm fine on a bike. As long as I'm in motion, I'm okay.
Okay. So this does not affect your bicycle riding, just your like standing and walking.
I just can't sit still, basically.
Okay. How much of these drugs do you have to take to feel good?
I'm only taking one pill per night.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get nightmares.
And then I get nightmares.
Because you were texting me last night, right?
It tells you a side effect is nightmares, and I'm supposed to take this right before I go to bed.
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm going to get nightmares then because I just read this.
It's a psychosomatic drug.
Yeah, it's already in my head.
And I said, like, you know, dream of voodoo donuts unless that's a nightmare.
Right, which it is.
Yeah, and so, well, yeah, and you don't eat bacon.
Lines and bacon.
Yeah.
Long lines and bacon.
Right. Well, I'm glad that it's not worse than it, than
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's not so bad. I feel like I find it hard to find the right words a lot of times.
Okay.
Which will do great for my career in podcasting.
Welcome to podcasting. Yeah. Well, that's a good time, I guess. Here's to being drug-free soon. Kids, don't do drugs.
Don't
stay
do
in
drugs
school.
Unless prescribed by a doctor.
Right.
Even so, try to do it sparingly.
Right, right. So I took a bicycle camping trip to Cascade Locks this weekend.
You bastard.
Yes. Yeah, Every time.
You and all the cool kids.
Well, kind of. I mean, I would like to think I was one of the coolest of the kids. No, we took a bunch of folks that don't usually go bicycle camping. A couple of folks have gone with us before, and a bunch of them had never done a bike camping tour before. One of them was your friend Delaney, who is now my friend Delaney, because we spent some time together. So
I'll try not to be jealous.
Well, you don't have to be jealous. You could be his friend, too.
Oh, okay.
And just keep on fighting about him as the weeks go on. No, he's my friend. For at least one lady, this was her very first bicycle trip.
No kidding.
Didn't even have panniers, didn't have a backpack. I brought the bob trailer and carried a couple of people's extra stuff.
Oh, okay.
So all in all, we went out to Cascade Locks. We went to the brewery, Thunder Island Brewing. And you can
how
camp.
Are those guys?
Oh, they're doing all right. Yeah. Debo was there. And cool. By Debo, I mean Dan, because the other guy is also Debo. But yeah, Dan was super cool to us. You know, he brought a free pitcher of beer out to us and said, hey, have some fun. So we did. But we were there for like 3 hours and drank a lot. We stayed at the KOA because we wanted to get a fire ring, and you can camp for free as a bicyclist in Marine Park, I guess. But you can't have a fire there. So we thought we'd kill two birds with one stone, get farther away from the train tracks, because if you sleep in the park, like right down by the waterfront.
It's basically next to the tracks.
Yeah, exactly. It's right there. So we went to the KOA. We're like, oh, we'll get farther away. But it turns out anywhere you go in Cascade Locks
is next to the tracks.
You cannot get away from the train tracks, because the city is built on this really thin strip of land between like cliff face rocks and water.
Oh, okay.
And so there's train and there's stores and like 5 feet of grass. So that's it. Anyways, it was a good trip. The best part, the thing I thought was the most fun, was that when we went out, we bought campfire wood because we got the campfire rings at the KOA, and we went camping with a K. Right next to the camping cabins with a K, with two Ks. But we
this
did
is,
not camp
getting,
in the
I'm
cabins.
I'm getting a little nervous with all these Ks here.
I know.
One more K and I'm out.
Do not stitch those together. Nope. So we bought firewood. There's no K in firewood. We bought that, bought two bundles and thought, hey, we're going to make, you know, a big old bonfire and be up all night. And we were up pretty late, but we never used the second bundle. And so when you pay $6 for a bundle of firewood, you don't want to just leave it behind. So I threw it in the bob trailer and brought it back to Portland. So I don't know how much a bundle of firewood weighs, but it was a lot. And it took me a long time to get home.
I was going
to
say, how is that? I'm assuming you took the historic highway.
We took the historic highway route.
Okay,
yeah.
So how is that ride up to Vista Point?
Up to and Crown Point. Yeah. I made it up. Yeah. I won't say I was drinking a beer out in public illegally, because that would be wrong. I won't say that.
I wasn't asking.
Yeah. So, anyways, it was.
But
a good
you made
trip.
It up there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely. Great view. Beautiful weather both ways. So nice. We'll see how much longer this holds out.
Yeah. This is. I keep waiting for it to dump on us.
Yeah. Well, out of a blue sky today, probably not. But soon. I have a housewarming party next week. I'm hoping it holds out at least until then. Then it can rain all at once.
I hope it rains on your party.
Oh, thanks. So, hey, thanks for sharing this brainwashed soda, by the way.
Isn't that disgusting?
It's pretty bad, yeah. I forget who makes this, but if you come across brain... Is this like, what is it, Captain Jack's Cola or like the company that makes that? Anyways,
oh,
it's
really?
It's not that great. So I am finishing this for you because you decided not to.
Thanks
you,
for
sir,
taking one for the team here.
Are also tripping balls tonight.
Tripping balls guarana root beer.
Yeah, it's BAWLS.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a pretty familiar soda, I think. You'll find that in just about any Fred Meyer.
How is the root beer flavor? Because I've never had the original.
I like the root beer. I've had this before.
Okay, yeah. Nice.
They originally were marketing it as like geek beer or something like
geek
that.
Geek beer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's, gosh, 4 or 5 years ago.
Huh. So
first discovered that.
So I guess
and
we're
now
geeks.
They're just calling it Ball's root beer.
Okay.
Apparently they don't consider themselves geeks anymore.
We're moving up in the world. Doing okay.
Mm. Look how far we've come.
Yeah. Mr. Hand, you have, what is it, V8, right?
Yes.
V8 Splash.
V8 Tropical Blend.
Yes.
The Tropical Blend.
Yes.
Ooh.
That's got some mango in it, right?
Maybe. Probably nothing real anyway.
Oh, okay.
Has a mango picture on the front, if that means anything.
Okay, so it has at least essence of mango.
Yes.
Nothing else.
I can see from here, though, it has vitamins A and C.
Yeah.
At most.
So it's V8, but it only has 2 vitamins.
Yeah.
I bet it has more. And then, Raggy, you are, which one did you settle on? This is
the delicious Gooyaki. I am not a coffee drinker. I'm 1 in a million in the Cascadia area that does not like coffee.
How did you get away with that?
Yeah.
I tell people I'm going to go and get a coffee, at least my coworkers. I'm like, oh, that's fine. If I ever tell them I'm going to go get a tea, they're like, actually, you should probably stay here and keep working.
Okay.
So
it's kind of like if you're working in a kitchen, it's okay to go out for a cigarette, but it's not okay just to go out and like lean against the dumpster.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. Just
gotcha.
Like that.
Well, I'm glad that you're enjoying this then.
It's delicious.
We'll just tell everybody you went out for coffee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, actually. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about bike polo.
Perfect.
So this is the reason we brought you all here today. Bike polo, it's got a long and storied history, I imagine. It seems like it's been around for a while.
The bike polo as a sport has been around since the 1800s.
Okay.
The modern version that we play, the hardcore bike polo, has been around since the late 1990s.
Okay. So why don't we start with what you do, and then maybe we can talk about how it differs from other kinds.
I guess our hardcore version is a 3-on-3 game, mostly on abandoned tennis courts that the city lets us play on. If you're lucky, you have a hockey court in your town you can play on, or a basketball court with sidewalls. It really depends on what your Parks and Rec allows you to play
on.
Okay,
and I was going to say, is this a renegade sort of sport? Like, do people just take over tennis courts, or is this the sort of thing that you really have to find permission
when you're
for?
Starting out a club, you do. It's definitely a renegade sport. You're playing in a tennis court until you get kicked out. You're playing in a parking garage until you get kicked out.
Okay.
But once you build a community around the sport, you have enough people, then you start talking to the Parks and Rec and finding out where you can actually play.
Okay. And this is based off of, if I'm not mistaken, original polo was like horse polo, right?
Originally based off horse polo. Now it's kind of a mix of horse polo and a lot of hockey in there, too.
Okay. So like hockey with bikes.
Yes.
Which seems like, seems like a good idea.
Yeah, it's a lot closer nowadays to bike hockey, but no one wants to say that.
Okay.
Doesn't sound as well. Yeah, because they're all the tongue.
Do you like pull each other's jerseys over their heads? And just, you
know. There have been a few tournaments where fights have been allowed. Kind of like hockey,
really?
Like as soon as you go on the ground, the fight's over. It's like if your foot touches the ground at all, the fight's over. But it's never happened like at the tournaments that allow it.
Okay.
Kind of like a cage fight is not to the death, even though that's kind of the environment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are the actual, what's the objective? Because as much as I like bikes, I don't follow balls a lot. So how does this work?
Honestly, it was when I first started playing, it was like learning how to ride a bike all over again.
Okay.
Because you're riding with one hand. When I very first started, most people who start play with one rear brake only. Now I play with one front brake only. So you're rarely on with two hands unless you're like up mashing, trying to catch up to someone. So you have one hand on the bike controlling it, one hand with the mallet. It can get confusing in the very beginning.
Okay. And there's like a goal area or?
So it's 1st to 5, the modern way of playing it right now. It's slowly changing. But as it is right now, it's a 1st to 5 game. Whoever scores 5 goals first wins.
Okay.
Or the allotted time if there's the 12-minute game, whichever comes first.
Gotcha. How big is this goal area? Is it like a soccer stanchion, or is it like a
4 feet?
It's 6 feet wide by about 3 feet tall.
Okay, yeah. So you've got plenty of room to plenty of goal to aim for.
When there's a bike in the way, there's a little less. But, I mean, yeah, there's still plenty, especially as you learn how to play the sport and can aim your shots.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you said 3-on-3?
Yes.
Okay. Are the teams bigger than that?
No. Depends. Teams are, as it currently stands, it's still a young sport, so there's still lots of fluctuation and people trying to figure out what's the best way to help the sport progress. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of talks about more than just 3-on-3, like 5-on-5, but still 3 on the court, or bigger club benches, like 3-on-3, but you still have like a 7-man bench where you can sub people in and out.
Okay.
So there's people who are trying to pull it more towards hockey, some traditionalists keeping it the 3-on-3, but as it is right now, it is a 3-on-3, 3 men only.
Okay. Or women?
Yes.
Is this a segregated
three human
sport?
Beings only?
Like, is it a like men's league and women's league, or is it like anybody who wants to come and play comes and plays?
It's definitely co-ed. I feel like with girls, they're like, oh, this is a crazy intense sport, I'm gonna get mashed around. I'm like, yes, but not that much. It's bearable pain when you hit the ground. It's not that bad.
Okay.
But it is definitely more guys versus girls.
Okay.
Kind of thing. We have maybe about 15 guys in the club right now and about 5 girls or so.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. But the ladies are distributed among the teams then, or?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. So it's not like there's like the feminine team. No.
Nope.
All right. Well, this is fascinating, I guess, just because like I would imagine you need to foster a bunch of skills in riding. Like what are some of the things you need to learn how to do on a bike that maybe don't come naturally?
Brake with one hand and not have your entire body be thrusted forward so your stem hits you in the nice part, and then it's just downhill from there. So definitely staying on your saddle while braking really hard.
Okay. That was the first thing I thought of when you mentioned having just one brake up front.
Yeah.
I imagine myself just flying right off.
The very first time I played bike polo, I went out. I mean, I knew I'm from Missouri, and the first time I played was in Columbia, Missouri at the University of Missouri there. And I played on a bike that was front brake only. My very first game, I went over the handlebar probably 3 times because I just kept pulling it and just going straight over it. But for some reason, it made me want to come back, and here I am. 3.5 years later, still playing the game.
You're a glutton for punishment then.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, how much, there's definitely potential to be hurt. How much actual getting hurt do you think happens? Like what's normal?
Honestly, for how much the sport is played around the world and however many clubs there are, you don't hear of that many serious injuries. Mm-hmm. At North Americans 2 years ago, one of our club mates got his shin sliced open about 12 inches long. I've heard of, you've heard of like broken hands and people getting gored, but I mean, it's so far in between how much polo is probably happening like on a day-to-day basis around the world that surprisingly there are few injuries.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I imagine like you're saying, you're developing these skills, and the goal as you're developing these skills is to keep yourself from getting hurt as well as to be able to manipulate.
Yeah, exactly. Most people play clipped in too. So, I mean, mm-hmm. another skill you learn is how to hop around on a bike without falling over.
Okay.
One of the big rules in polo is if you dab, which is where you put your foot on the ground, you have to go tap back in. So you're trying to do everything you can so you don't dab.
Okay, so dabbing, you put your foot on the ground.
Yes.
Tap in means you have to like leave the court and come back?
There's the center marks, the very center of the court along the walls. You go and tap one of those points, and then you can come back into play, and you can't be in play until you tap back in.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Okay, almost like freeze tag, but not quite.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, you definitely don't want to leave your teammates hanging even for at least 5 seconds.
Right, right. Like in foosball, I suppose. Like if your left hand doesn't know what your right hand is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So that's, I'm trying to visualize this. You've got people on bikes. Are we talking fixed bikes here?
No.
No.
There are probably only like a couple fixed riders still around.
We had a fixed rider, and now he rides with a coaster.
We converted him.
Yeah. So it there's no advantage then to having a fixed gear bike to play polo.
People like to say you can roll backwards, but I mean, once you figure it out, it's just so much easier to not be fixed when you're rushing up a court and you need to play a ball while breaking with one hand at the same time. It's a lot harder to do when you're fixed. That's too much to think about.
Sure.
Yeah, and you take a lot of sharp corners too, so you definitely want to have your feet angled at the right position whenever you're taking that sharp turn so you don't pedal clip yourself.
Ah, gotcha. So you don't want your foot stuck at a certain point in that pedal rotation.
Yes.
When you could just be coasting around this corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Wow, that's fascinating. Okay. Because I would have assumed exactly the opposite. Having never had any exposure to polo, I would have expected that that the fixed gear would have a great advantage. But this is, yeah, this is not the case.
Yeah, a lot of people actually ask us if we all play on fixed gears, and none. Not at all, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe I've seen some people with something in the spokes or something over the wheel. Is that
yeah,
common?
Yeah, we have wheel covers, which pretty common.
Yeah, like hubcaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Usually just some chloroplast, just some type of plastic to put over it. A lot of recycled campaign signs at the end of the year. Just go snagging those off corners and cut those up. Some companies make them now that are a lot thinner and like cut to 26 or 700. So... yeah, with the bike polo companies increasing, then they start making these cooler products.
Yeah. What advantage does that give you?
There's a few. Even though we play with 48 spoke wheels, you can still get balls through it every once in a while.
Okay, I was curious, yeah.
Yeah, and every so often you get a mallet or a pedal in there, so it's for your safety.
Okay, yeah. Because if that gets stuck in your drivetrain,
yeah, exactly.
That's no good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to either of you?
Nope, and I don't play with wheel covers anymore. I just got too lazy to put them back on after tournaments,
okay.
So I've been pretty lucky.
Good.
Yeah, they protect your spokes most of the time as well. Some people are really good at hitting the ball really hard, and if you're the goalie trying to block it, it can definitely dent your spoke.
Sure, and then all of a sudden you have a bike that's not really usable.
It's usable. You usually keep playing on it until... you're like, oh, this is actually about to really break. Then I should probably take this home later. And
okay, yeah.
That's definitely the advantage of having 48 spokes.
Right, right. And isn't that standing for like a tandem wheel?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where they came from originally.
Okay.
And then Surly made a polo hub for a while. I'm not sure if they still are. Now a couple of bike polo companies are making 48 hole hubs.
Okay, mm-hmm. Nice. Aaron, Flores, so far from what you're hearing, is this something you'd like to do?
Well, let's see. High chances of getting hurt. Possibly breaking your bicycle. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. this is your style.
We are very nice.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think were I to have a bike that would befit bike polo, I don't think my current setup would work. But yeah, I think this would be really fun to try out.
Yeah. I was also thinking about that. Who is that advertiser that wanted to sell advertising space on people's bikes? And it was going to go like over the wheel area, right?
Yeah, I don't remember who they were. It was going to go like on the front fork.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, where like if you had a front rack, that's where, you know, it would have been
hooked
onto.
Yeah. But yeah, that would also keep a polo ball from going through your spokes.
I guess so.
So you could be a sponsored polo player through this new company.
There we go.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard about this? Some teams do have wheel covers with their sponsors on them.
Okay.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. That's hilarious. I would not have thought of that at all.
I mean, you could
Team Marlboro.
Right. Exactly.
Unfortunately, yeah, we don't have a Marlboro sponsorship, smaller level sponsorships. But yeah, I mean, it's not unheard of.
We'll work our way up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one step at a time.
We're trying.
Yeah. The mallet is this like a croquet mallet? Is it similar?
It's made out of a ski pole.
Okay.
With a ABS piping on the end of it. It's usually about 5 inches long.
Okay.
Around there, sometimes even 4.
So very lightweight then.
Yeah. They've it started out a ski pole, some gas piping. We've advanced it quite a bit. There's companies making shafts and mallet heads, and mostly made from UHMW, the mallet heads now, and the shafts are lightweight aluminum. Different thicknesses of the shafts. So if you're a heavy hitter who likes to hit your front wheel a lot, you have the 1 millimeter thick, or you have the 0.8 for the really light touches who aren't breaking shafts all the time.
Okay, depending on how subtle this person is, they might have more heavy or lightweight gear.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. And then the ball is how big?
It is a modified roller hockey ball, so I don't know how big a roller hockey ball is. About hand size,
like a Tangelo.
Yeah.
Okay. Or some other citrus fruit, maybe an average size lemon.
Without the two knobs.
Right, because that would interfere.
Somewhere around a tennis ball, a tennis ball size.
There we go. Hollow, solid?
Hollow.
Hollow.
Yeah.
All right. So very much like a tennis ball.
Yep.
All right.
Just not as bouncy as a tennis ball.
Right. Okay. Very good. Well, this is exciting. So what are tell us some stories about some games you have enjoyed, like certain matches that stick out in your mind as like, this was epic. And why was that?
For me personally, I've been playing 3.5 years now. I have won only 2 tournaments. Both of those tournaments were in not the traditional 3-on-3 style. They were in the bench style that I mentioned, sort of like hockey, where you have 3-on-3 on the court, but you still have a bench full of people.
Okay.
The first time I won was back in Columbia. It was the Midwest Bench Championship, so all the clubs from the Midwest competing together.
Mm-hmm.
And my Columbia, Missouri bike polo, Como Polo, won that tournament. That was February, I believe, of 2013, and that was my first tournament win ever, so it was a really exciting moment. Those games are 1-hour-long games with 2 30-minute halves. We were down at half the first half, and we came back in the second half to win, so it was just like a huge moment for me.
Yeah.
And then the other win was just this past weekend with Portland Bike Polo. We had the North American Bench Championships, and Portland took home the North American Bench Champions.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Was it close?
No, unfortunately.
You creamed them.
The bad part was this is the first trial period for the North American Bench Championships.
Okay.
So like I was mentioning, it's typically 3-on-3. We have qualifiers that lead to North Americans that lead to Worlds, and they just kind of shoved in, they being the organizing body for North American Bike Polo, which is the NAH, they kind of just shoveled in a North American Bench Championship.
Okay.
Like out of nowhere,
yeah.
Almost, but it was right after Worlds, and Worlds was in France this year, so all the good clubs, minus Portland, spent all their money flying out to France, and they didn't have money to come to Lexington, Kentucky, where the bench championship was, so
okay.
Unfortunately, we kind of walked through the tournament, but I mean, we went because we wanted to be the first champions.
Right, right.
Well, however you get it, you have that distinction.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I don't have to tell everyone else this. I can just say I'm the champion.
There's right. No asterisk after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Lexington a traditional polo hub? Like, I'm just thinking of horses and things.
Or was it just sort of
things,
selected?
Or, yeah.
It's a college town. I think that helps it grow. You find it in almost every college town around the U.S., I would say.
Okay.
And it helps being from the Midwest, too, because you have a lot more
flat ground.
Yeah, that, and I don't say poverty is not the right word, but the Parks and Rec just don't have as much money to upkeep in the Midwest. So we were lucky enough in Columbia, we had an old hockey court that wasn't being used.
Oh, like there's a lot of sports fields that get shut down.
Yeah, and then in Lexington, they have an old tennis court that was abandoned, and the Parks and Rec likes them using it, so it's not used for other negative things that can happen in a community. So,
right.
They allow them to put
in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a lot more of that in the smaller college towns than you do like in the bigger cities. So that definitely helps. And they have 3 beautiful courts there that are probably the best courts in North America easily.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, they spend a lot of money and a lot of time working with their city to build 3 amazing courts.
Yeah. Raggy, were you also on this championship tour?
I did not. I do not travel that much for polo, being my income, but I still like to watch all the games that are going on through via internet and cheer everyone on and heckle them inside my head. So I count that.
Nice. Well, what's your best heckling move?
That's not your hole. I think would be one of my favorites, or put it in the bucket.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you have a game that you participated in that sticks out in your head? Something that was just epic?
Yeah, every year there is an all-girls tournament. It's called Ladies Army, and it is in different locations every year. I think this is maybe in 2012. It was in Vancouver, BC, and I just got to play with a bunch of girls, which is really rare. Whenever you go to tournaments, it's like a giant sausage fest.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is a little too much, and it kind of smells a little bit around here. But this
so
time...
So it goes. I apologize.
It's okay. We're very used to it by now. But yeah, playing with a bunch of girls, there are some really, really badass girls that are just really tough, really knew what they were doing, and they're really nice at like teaching as well. just those kind of tournaments. And Vancouver, BC is a beautiful place, and the players there as well definitely make sure that you have a fun time with partying and on the sides going out to eat and the beach and everything like that. It was just a really, really fun tournament. Had some really funny moments with some friends as well. So
nice. Funny as in...
Well, if I may say this, I hope my friend isn't listening, but if he is, that's okay.
Well, this is an anonymous friend.
Of course, yeah. No, it's okay. Elijah, I remember I was sleeping on the couch, you were sleeping on the floor, 3 o'clock in the morning, you get up, and I was like, oh, weird, you're sleepwalking. And you go over to the edge of the couch where your messenger bag is, with your phone, your clothes for work the next day, your charger, everything. You whip it out, and you just start pissing. Like a good 45-second long, I've probably drank about 12 beers by now because I'm a big guy and I can handle it, and I just lay there. I'm like, I'm not gonna wake him up. Nope, not at all. He finally puts it back in. He goes over to my friend's door, which is right next to him, and all I hear from inside is like, no Elijah get out. And I run over to him, I'm like, Max, I think Elijah just peed on your floor. It's like, oh, is that what this wet puddle is? I'm like, yep. So we got to clean up our amazing friend's pee
at
3 o'clock in the morning because we love him.
Two episodes back, I shared my story of something very similar.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
It was a boot.
It was. Yes. It was my wife's shoe.
Oh.
So it goes. Yeah. So I feel for anonymous Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that sounds entertaining, at least.
It was.
At least for the ones that were not implicated in the... For you, at least.
Yeah, he had hardwood floor, so it wasn't
bad. Oh, okay, sure.
You know, no carpet.
That's probably the better situation in the long run.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The great thing about hardwood floors is that they make you deal with the situation at hand instantly. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just forget about it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that was the best part.
Okay.
Feel bad for the towels, though.
Right.
Those are sitting there for a little bit after.
Yeah. Supreme Laundry, the best strength detergent you could ever find. Sometimes it's still not enough.
Hot water.
Yes, yeah, steaming, yeah. Steaming water.
So it seems like bike polo could be done by anybody with any kind of bike. Is this accurate?
It's pretty close. Most clubs nowadays, I would say, have a loaner bike, or at least people are willing to let people use their bikes.
Okay.
But we always encourage people to come out and try it on their bike. I mean, gearing's pretty specific for such a small court, so most bikes don't have... I mean, I run a 3320 on mine, which, I mean, it's kind of hard to get that specific ratio on just like a normal street bike.
And sure.
So that's why we always encourage people to use one of our loaner bikes that we have laying around. I mean, a lot of clubs around the country have loaner bikes in their club.
And that does that mean... I'm bad with the numbers. Do you know what that means, Mr. Flores?
3320?
Yeah.
Well, it means there's 30.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, is that bigger or smaller than the usual arrangement, something you would find?
So relating it to, like, what I have on my bike, it would be maybe 2 in from the wheel in the back and close to the small one up front.
Okay.
A little bit larger than my small one up
front. There we go. So this is you can have a fair amount of play in your pedal stroke. Like, you can pedal really hard without going too fast.
Yeah, so you want... It's a small court, about 120 feet if you have a really good court. So you want the momentum to get super quick bursts of speed. And with a small ratio like that, you have the ability to get the small bursts. Unlike a typical like track bike, which is like a 50 by 16, where you want a heavy speed over time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Built for racing around and delivering messages, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So something where you're going long distances and you want to build up speed for a long time, that would be great. But bike polo, you want the small ratio so you get the quick bursts.
Yeah, delivering a ball.
Yep.
To the goal.
Also having a flat handlebars as well. You definitely don't want to have drop-down handlebars. Mm-hmm. If you have drop-down handlebars, you have to like really lean to get your brake lever. So flat bars, you're at that good medium, kind of like upright position where your hand is always, you at least always have 2 fingers on the brake lever at the entire time that you're playing.
Because so you're
constantly
braking.
Yes, you stop a lot.
Okay, gotcha.
So you want that to be very easy accessible.
That's one of the biggest things when people first come out. I mean, it's not a problem. It's just like they'll touch a ball, then they'll do like a big circle and then kind of get back to it. Because you're not used to just hitting your brakes constantly, like constantly pedaling brake, pedal brake. So it's something you learn as well.
And would you recommend Disc or Rim Break?
Discs are definitely the way to go, especially here in Cascadia, just because we play all year round, all weather, and it's still small enough of a sport that where you can't change things last minute. So if you go to a big important tournament and it's raining, like they can't postpone it for the next week.
Right.
So you have to have the disc break because you never know what kind of weather is going to happen.
It also stops you a lot faster as well. In polo, a lot of people do a lot of nose pivoting. You hit on your front brake, kind of bring up your back wheel, and you can also turn your back wheel. And so it's a really easy way just to turn instead of trying to turn your entire front of your bike into a slow circle.
Which would be a lot easier if you were clipped in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Since the sport has become, becoming clipped in and front brake and disc has only happened within the past like 2 years, a year and a half even, like everyone's slowly transforming it. Like the sport is still young and people are still finding out what's perfect.
I wonder if there's been other like cultural changes along with the technological changes. Like you mentioned, it's getting to be, or there's a push to make it more like hockey. I wonder if that also is somehow correlated with the change in like the way you're turning or the way you're braking.
It could. I think it has to do a lot with trying to make it a more audience friendly sport. We love playing the sport. We all spend a ton of money a year traveling around, buying bikes and equipment, and having the ability to have a sponsor or like a Busch Stadium for bike polo, you know, where we could go and have an event. We're trying to find what can get us there, and we feel like having longer games for the bench style might push us there. So I think that's kind of where that comes from.
Okay.
More of a spectacle.
Yeah, exactly.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah, as it
are
is.
Are you not entertained?
As it is now, it's most tournaments are like qualifiers, championships are a 2-day event where you have Swiss rounds on the first day, and then the second day is a double elimination bracket.
What's a Swiss round?
A Swiss round is where you have a fancy math formula that figures out who you should play based off your rankings and other people's rankings.
Okay. Interesting. And then you said, what was it, double elimination?
Then double elimination on the
second. So everybody gets two shots
to
prove themselves and come out on top.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, that's a little less spectator-friendly than if we can get like hour-long or hour-and-a-half-long matches to where you can have people sit down and cheer for players and watch as their favorite player comes on the court and off the court, things like that.
And then comes the costumes and the personas.
Exactly. The nicknames.
The nicknames are the best.
How spectator-friendly is bike polo just on the average? Like, is it easy to walk up to a game and say, hey, that this will be fun to watch? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Usually whenever we're playing a game, we usually have about 8 people, maybe 10 people sitting on the sidelines, just hanging out, chatting with each other, sitting on the blankets. So a lot of people come on by and be like, what is this? And most of us, we are very, very friendly. So we'll try, like, oh, this is bike polo. You should try and get on your bike and play. And a lot of people are like, I don't know about this. But yeah, we're really, really friendly and just want kind of everyone to know that this may look intense and pretty hard, but we're actually really friendly people and we're not trying to hurt you. We're just trying to show you what else is fun.
Yeah, and it's super fun.
Yeah, we're lucky enough too that we play at a very popular park. We play at Alberta Park here, which is very populated park on the weekends when it's nice out. So
is that up on Ainsworth and like
it's Killingsworth and 20th?
That's right. Okay. Yeah. I'm pretty close to an elementary school, I think. Yeah.
Right across the street there.
I've been past there a couple times when polo has been happening. So next time I go past there when polo is happening, I'll have to stop and watch.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Give it a try maybe.
So I'm curious as far as, it seems like you obviously have to master control of your bike and get used to manipulating it to do the things you want it to do. And just as a sidebar, I'm not a huge fan of clip-in pedals for like everyday cycling, but I like this as a very specific instance when you really want to be connected to your bike, basically for sport. Like, I understand if you're a racer, it makes sense to clip in as well. I would never encourage anybody to get clip-ins just as like, this is your first bike, here, clip into it. But it seems like in this context, it's very useful. But I was thinking of, at Film by Bike, there's been a couple of different great films of mountain bikers doing amazing things with disc brakes and clipped in pedals. And they're like hopping from there. The one where the guy was hopping like across a, set of train cars or something like that. And
was it 2 years ago?
Yeah. I would imagine those would be transferable skills. Like if someone has trained themselves to do mountain bike tricks, they might also do well in polo.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. You see a lot of BMXers too who are really comfortable being on a bike that come out and they can get close to other players and maneuver their bikes in ways that people who are just like commuters can't.
Okay.
Helps you balance on your bike a lot better as well.
Yeah. The other thing I was curious about, I think the question I put to you right before we rolled tape was, does it make you want to ride your bike more or less at other times of life when you're not playing polo?
That's a hard one. It's a little of both sometimes. Like sometimes I'm riding around and I'm like, this ratio feels so heavy right now compared to, you know, the polo ratio. And
right.
When you're out there just going for about, I don't know, in our pickup games, we play for roughly about 15 minutes. So you're riding around for about 15 minutes and then you're done. You go sit down and hang out with your friends. Sometimes that's just all I want to ride. And then other times you have the urges to go on the long rides. I mean, it definitely gives you skills that you're more confident to ride more frequently. So at least you have that.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it would help you survive in a city a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's traffic makes it a lot easier.
Knowing how to work a front brake is very helpful, especially when you have the ability to just slam on a front brake and know how to stay on your bike. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
That has come in handy for me quite a few times. I just slam on my front brake and I stay in my seat, but my tires are still skidding.
Yeah.
That has helped incredibly.
Has that happened recently?
Probably about a month ago.
Okay. What happened?
Going down on the bike lane, there are two cars kind of stopped next to me in the lane, and a guy didn't see me as he was crossing over, so we almost touched noses.
It's like a right hook situation sort of thing, where he was turning right.
He was coming from the other side of the street, kind of just like going straight in front of all the cars, but didn't see me riding in the bike lane. So
it would have been like a T-bone situation or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And slammed on my brakes, and I was like, ah, this is nice. I know how to stay in my seat and not even flip over my handlebars.
And you stayed on.
And I stayed on.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you play bike polo.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Me too.
That among many other reasons. you mentioned that this happens everywhere. What's a good way for people to find out where bike polo is happening near them?
The best source is leagueofbikepolo.com.
Leagueofbikepolo.
Yes.
.com.
That's our biggest forum for bike polo, and on there it has a tab where you can just click on. It says clubs, and you can find the club nearest you.
Okay.
Yeah, they play this in about pretty much every state, every country as well. It's actually all over the world. I used to live in Austin, Texas when I was a little bit younger, and I had no idea polo even existed, but it actually was playing at the park.
Yeah. Last question, polo shirts, for or against? I'm wearing one. Don't let that sway your decision.
Personally, I do not wear them. But I don't spend my money on clothes necessarily. I'll buy some t-shirts if I'm supporting a band or like a bike polo team. But outside of that, I don't really spend money on clothes. So I guess I'm kind of biased.
It's okay. It's harder to find a good polo shirt used or free.
Yeah. If I had like my own logo on the back of the shirt, then I'd probably wear the polo shirt.
Okay.
But other than that, I'm also not much on spending money for clothing wise.
There we go. Yeah. And there we have it. Polo shirts, thumbs down.
Is your dream to do it, to have a bike polo team dressed in polo shirts?
Maybe. Well, I feel like, is it Ralph Lauren that has the polo thing with the actual horse polo logo thing?
Yeah.
There's a company out of England called Chunk Clothing.
Okay.
Really?
They have a subsidiary of that. It's Chunk Bike Polo, which they do. They had the Ralph Lauren logo, but a guy on a bike.
There
was actually a lawsuit that went on for many years between the two, and they ended up having to change the logo because of it. But they do sell bike polo polos.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, I could see that happening. It seems like it's just begging to be done.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
By someone. Probably me, because I don't really know what I'm asking for. Well, thank you again for coming in. And do you guys, either of you have any like personal website stuff, anything that people could look up on the internet if they wanted to know more about what you do?
Yes, 321polo.net.
321polo.net.
Yep, that is the blog I run. Feel free to check out anything. You see all the bike polo frames, all the bike polo companies, all the new rules. It's a good insight without having to go sit through a forum and feed through everything.
Yeah.
And just again, for the record, where and when are you playing?
Portland, we play mostly Saturday and Sunday at Alberta Park.
which is up in the northeast part of town at Killingsworth and 22nd?
20-something. Just bike around. You'll see
it. The big green area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can also find us on Facebook. If you just type in Portland Bike Polo, you can probably see some pictures of us riding around on our bikes, just kind of getting a feel of what the scene looks like, what the scenery
Excellent.
View is.
Yeah. Excellent.
We're usually smiling in the pictures.
Very good. And you'll know what to wear when you show up.
Yes, definitely.
Not polo shirts.
Nope. Lots of knee pads and elbow pads.
Excellent. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Would you like to hang out and listen to us read the mail?
Yeah. Sounds great.
Sounds gripping, I'm sure. So in that case.
Do it.
Oh, you may have to unmute this thing.
I may have to. There.
All right.
We
set?
Let's do that.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
All right. So I promised I wasn't going to mention. Actually, no, I promised I was going to continue mentioning our 200th episode, didn't I?
Oh, right.
So I'm
going
to mention it again.
I categorically deny that it happened.
I had this sort of fantasy of like sort of conducting everybody to sing that song. With us.
We'll have to do that next time we have a bunch of people together in a public place.
So episode 400.
Yeah. Four-part harmony.
All right. Firstly, we have a new Patreon donor, Scott McAllister Morgan.
Yeah. And this guy,
Thank you.
I sent him a postcard this summer from our trip on the road.
Yeah.
And and he's a common Twitterer.
He follows my bike on the Twitters.
Oh, there we go. Excellent. As your bike rides around the Twitter sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that, Scott. And again, we do this out of our pockets. So if you like what you're hearing, you got a couple bucks to spare, you can start at $2, and we're just about halfway to paying all the costs to make it happen. So
Maybe one day I'll make you a tote.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Patreon.com/TheSprocketPodcast.
Next up, Johnny K on Brock's public service announcement to brunchgoers. Where I am from, we call that killing two birds with one stone. Not only did you keep those fine, ignorant cagers.
Cagers, huh?
I don't know what that means. Maybe it's a Florida-ism.
Maybe so.
From getting tickets, you also made it better for cyclists riding that route. Anyway, I did my good deed today as well. I was thanked this morning for waiting while a person exited the bus this morning. So I said, good morning, and you're welcome, and biked on. The bus didn't block the bike lane, so I could have been a jerk and kept riding. That's just not me.
Just not me. Yeah, and I think John had actually put another comment a couple weeks ago about what are you supposed to do when a transit bus stops and does not pull into the bike lane? And I think the good idea is to make sure that you're not going to mow anybody down before you pass that back door, right as somebody steps out of it.
Good thing is our buses here always pull into the bike
lane. Most of them do. I would imagine that's how they're trained. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that is maybe for the best.
Mm-hmm. Slightly inconvenient if you do the leapfrog thing. Either of you guys do the leapfrog thing?
I've done that a number of times up and down division.
Where like you're kind of following a bus. The bus stops to either pick up or drop off passengers. You pass it. Then the bus passes you again. You do this about three or four times.
And then you pass it.
Probably four times.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Four is your record?
Yeah. Four is a good number.
All right. There you go. If it gets to be more than four, then what do you do?
Then I just try to go faster than the bus.
Okay. Excellent.
I think by four times, you should get a free ride on the bus.
That would be awesome. I hardly ever take the bus, though. But just for, in a good pocket, just take it out of the pocket. And you're like, hey, I got this free ticket.
That's right.
You never know when you might need one.
It's true.
I think a couple of years ago, TriMet actually gave away bus passes called, what was it, like a flat tire repair kit or something like that.
Oh, really?
Technically, you weren't repairing your tire, but they were like, if your bike has a flat, put it on the bus, which I thought was cute. So,
that is cute.
Yeah, I don't think they do it anymore. It's before they put the little hologram stripes on them or whatever.
So it's before the drivers union took all their money.
Well, it's before
that was a joke. joke, everybody.
Boy, is it warm in here.
Dan Christensen is like madly dialing in to us right now.
I think it might have been also the time at which point people were taking the tickets and like making photocopies of them.
Oh,
like back when they were just plain old cardboard.
Yeah, you
could counterfeit tickets pretty easily. And I never thought that was such a great idea, but I knew that it was done.
Yes.
It wasn't me. And honestly, it wasn't me. It was like somebody else I knew. But I was like, I don't know about this. The ranger wouldn't like it, Yogi.
I don't know, Yogi.
Yeah. So.
I can't say I never did that, but I can say I never did that in Portland.
All right, then. Statue of limitations.
That's right.
What, this is like your fifth Portland anniversary?
Wait, this isn't a felony, is it?
Let's just move on.
Okay.
Can I read this from Gerald?
Sure.
Gerald had a three-part question. We talked a lot about rain last week, and he was saying, hey, other than a good type of rain jacket, I plan to be in the just get wet camp. What type of normal everyday pants are good at drying relatively quickly? And he wants to shop around. He doesn't want skinny jeans because he wants to put his rubber-coated smartphone into his pocket. So 10 to 40 bucks per pair of pants.
Jeans,
you could do that. Depends. Depends on the jeans. Depends
guess,
on your body.
I guess, yeah. Never mind.
What type of material should I be looking for? I say Levi's 517 poly pants, which is what I'm wearing right now.
Ah.
But those are, they dry quickly after they get wet in the rain. And they're fairly comfortable and they're fairly stylish. They have a crease in them, which I think always gets you a little more respect.
Ah,
a crease
yeah.
and a collar, I always say. But yeah, it's the trick with I think with any polyester pant is that they start to smell a lot faster than other materials. So depends on which you value more often. I don't know.
I don't necessarily value smell.
Okay. So you're okay with poly. But you also
no, I'm not
you
okay
use
with, poly makes me smell.
I oh okay.
Think.
Oh, gotcha.
It's a different set of bacteria that grows in poly.
Mm, yeah.
Your particular pH works better with it.
Oh, I don't think it does. I have lots of pairs, so I can like cycle them through every day.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
that's,
I guess it means more laundry.
Yeah.
Obviously, anyone who is a big fan of wool would say wool because,
of course,
you know, yeah, that takes care of part of the smell problem and part of the drying quickly problem as well. You just got a new set of, what is it, rain legs?
Rain legs.
Yeah. Have you guys
I
heard of these?
I swear by them.
Have not, no.
Rain legs are...
rain legs or rain mates are the two
oh, right.
brands.
Yeah.
They're basically chaps.
Right.
For rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Assless chaps.
As opposed to, well, yes.
Yeah.
As
Which is why
to,
they're great.
Like, a full pant. I like them because it's airy. Like, you get a good amount of air. But... you know, the tops and front of your legs are covered, which is really, that's what's going to get the most wet. I've never had too much trouble here in Portland, knock on wood.
Right.
And I just bought the half legs this time. I didn't buy the full set.
Oh, you can get them just as a half?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I could have saved some money.
You could.
I never used those bottom halves.
See? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and the times I do use those bottom halves, like, I get them caught in my derailleur more often.
Yeah, well, I think the brand that we have was not very well designed because they don't really have a securement built into the thing, the pant or the chap that secures it around your ankle. So
right.
a lot of potential for getting it into your chain, which
yeah.
is lame. But yeah, so if you get them just half, I guess, then you obviate that problem.
Right.
Part three of his question was, how do I combat soggy, waterlogged socks? Again,
oh, that's the worst.
I'm a huge fan
that's
of wool.
That's the worst.
Because wool tends to deal better with wet than cotton does or other kinds.
My ride is over when my feet get wet.
Yeah. Yeah. I also like rubber boots. I know they're not fashionable. They're not classy or whatever. I know there are shoe covers
out
there.
It works for you, man.
But rubber boots are relatively cheap, and they're almost bomb-proof, like, at least at first. Yeah, after
yeah.
a couple of years, they might break down and get holes or whatever. But, you know, for a good season, if not two seasons of rain, pair of rubber boots is going to be cheap and it's going to do you pretty well.
Adidas Sambas.
Yeah. Those are not waterproof,
these
right?
These are not Sambas. But
no.
These are my dry weather shoes.
Well, but the Sambas are not waterproof, right?
No, not really. But, I mean, unless I'm rolling through a pond.
Okay.
Which has happened.
Which you've done.
they're waterproof enough.
Okay.
You know, yeah, there's been a few times where, like, I roll through a really deep puddle or something and,
okay.
you know, you've got to continue pedaling to get through it. And as you're down on the downstroke, like,
right.
get that
or up on
there.
The downstroke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways,
like,
the
like
foot
the
gets
P-funk.
In gets yeah. in there. So long as I can keep it from coming up and over the shoe.
Okay.
I've found.
Gotcha.
It's been okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The waterproof shoe covers tend to be really good. As well, you can just
yeah.
take them on and off your shoe all the time. They tend to dry really quickly.
Yeah. You have your own pairs?
No, I have some waterproof DZR. It's like a clipless commuter shoe that's also waterproof.
Oh, okay.
Working in a bike shop, I get this stuff really cheap. Oh, so that's why I own a pair, or else I would never buy a pair of these ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Han, any recommendations?
I typically just bring a backup pair of shoes and socks to work. I just kind of gave up long ago trying to keep my feet dry.
On actual waterproofing.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so instead of trying to defend, just rebuild.
Yep, exactly. Okay. I just give in and let them rule my life. Let the rain rule my life.
And then last thing was, well, it was actually his middle thing, but what about rain capes? I have never used one. I know Clever Cycles, I was looking today on their website, has a very expensive one. And I remember Metacon Bikes out on Foster was selling the really thin ones that are often used in China. So I am sure there are rain capes sold in many other parts of Portland as well.
I found there are two types of people in this world.
Yes.
Those who have and love rain capes and everybody else.
Does that mean they wish they had rain capes or they're glad they don't?
No, I think if you have a rain cape, you love them, and you will sing their praises up and down.
And if you don't love it, you'll
throw
it away.
And everybody else, I guess so. To everybody else, it's just like this weird thing that like you're not quite sure of.
Ah, yeah.
Case in point, I'm not sure I would get a rain cape.
Okay, you're right. I have yet to try them.
They seem to be more suited towards upright riding. Like mm-hmm. I would imagine as I lean forward, as I do. My fear is that it's going to like start getting caught in spokes or chains or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rain capes are, they're actually a really, they are a pretty cool idea. They keep, instead of wearing like a hot, sweaty, rainproof jacket, you just have this cape that floats over you and you can also put it into your backpack really easily. I don't like looking like an umbrella. And so I feel a little strange.
Yeah, there is something about
rolling around. And also it doesn't keep your feet dry or like the bottom parts of your legs dry. So you'd still have to wear some type of waterproof, something underneath there. But yeah, like you said, a lot of people think they're really strange. With that small group of people, I can see why that they do love them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I have yet to try one out, so I need to go out and do some research and development.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see about this rain cape business. What's next?
Doug, who else? In Texas.
Oh, yes.
On escort services.
Hey, yo.
Hello. I wanted to send you a link to a strange new business idea.
It's not this a very business, new business idea
is not new.
But wait, let's let him explain.
That is launching on a Kickstarter. I can't believe we both thought of that, by the way. Did not discuss this beforehand. Launching on Kickstarter, and that is headquartered here where I am in San Antonio. It's called Swaggin', and it's a service that cyclists can use to request an escort car so they don't have to ride on their own. And to protect bikes from car traffic.
I think it's probably got to be done for people who are on pro racing teams.
Well, yeah, but this is for your average.
But this is not for pro racing teams. Thus, I'm not into this idea.
You are not into this idea.
No, but that's also because whenever I go out on a bike, I it's like the sticker says, I have one less car on the road. I'm trying to replace car trips with bike trips. I understand not everyone that's riding bicycles is trying to do that. But that's kind of dumb.
I kind of do this already. I call this friend with a car.
You mean you have your friends in cars just tailgate you?
Well,
tag along.
Have them drive up to the campsite first.
Oh, okay.
With all my stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it seems kind of redundant to have a car next to you while you ride to a thing.
Well, I also understand that not every place in America or the world or Texas is
especially.
Not quite the same. Yeah, it's not the same as like I feel like we're pretty privileged.
We live
here
in a bubble,
in Portland
sir.
Area.
We live
like,
in a bubble.
People are used to seeing bikes on the road, and they're generally okay with bikes being on the road. Haven't had that many bad experiences. I could see how in other parts of the world, if people were particularly aggro against you as a bicyclist in their cars, you might want another car to kind of play defense for you. Or
well,
something.
Yeah, maybe this speaks to a larger issue at hand.
This requires cultural change of a larger magnitude.
Yes.
I don't see this as a step towards that cultural change.
No.
No.
But if you are a cyclist and want to get out, I don't know. If you're a cyclist and want to get out and like this is your only option.
If this is the only way you feel safe.
Yeah.
Sure.
I would say do it.
Right. Yeah.
Also paying for this too. I feel like with riding my bike, I don't want to spend money. Therefore, I ride a bicycle.
Right,
I don't have to worry about insurance or gas. And this person would probably charge me money. And it's like, hey, I got to buy tires and tubes and chains. And I'd rather not spend it on this.
And roadside assistance. For the car, for the car that's following you to provide roadside assistance.
Right, yes.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Double indemnity or something. Yeah.
So, Doug, thank you.
Interesting to hear about. Thank you.
But we're going to just shoot holes in this idea.
Dan in Minnesota told us what he's been up to because we couldn't remember. He says, I miss my old haircut, been living simply. I'll be going back to college again to be a teacher. I do get funding from various places for schooling, so when I graduate, I will be debt-free. Good job, Woo! Sir. I will hopefully get my shit together and move out to Portland, Oregon. Well, that's cool. That's awesome.
Great.
Good job, Dan.
And bring your job when you come out.
And bring your Eero.
Oh, yeah.
That's the hairstyle, otherwise known as a mohawk, but it's factually inaccurate.
That is true.
Yeah. So, see previous episode.
Next, Tim Mooney sends us a story about riding your bike to a marathon.
Yeah. And this is the lady that, do you remember the Koffinuring challenge? About how it was like this thing where you
this sounds awfully familiar. Did we cover it when we hosted Chris Chen and
I
Kelly?
Think they might have talked a little bit about that.
Coffee,
yeah,
Kelly.
Yes, it was like the idea that you ride your bike to a bunch of coffee shops and log them and see who does the best coffee tour. The lady that put that together rode out from it's the C&O Trail out by Washington D.C. into parts nearby. And she rode out that way and ran a marathon, 26.2 miles. And then the next day, she rode back and she bike camped in between. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's it was almost. Rad. She said she's not a triathlete, but it was kind of like doing some sort of tri thing, wow. Which it was because she did three different things. And all three of those things, I guess, we're into. We haven't really talked about running or marathoning, right?
I can't say I'm into running. You have gotten into running.
I like running because it burns the calories that otherwise I would never burn.
Right.
Yeah, it's my only hope against gaining weight. So, yeah.
I only ran when I was playing soccer.
Ah, gotcha.
And maybe bike polo now.
Yeah. This is a great article, so we got that. And then lastly, Dude Luna. He sends us a picture of that rack that we were wondering about. Can you carry a bike on a motorcycle? And in fact, yes, you can.
I've had a couple friends build a racks for their motorcycles as well.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a great
especially
idea.
Especially for a bike polo, it's great because you don't want, I mean, the gearing's so low, so if you're traveling to the court, like say it's like a 5 mile distance to the court, like on such a small gear ratio, it takes forever. So they just built their racks on their motorcycles and they can zip without having to drive a car or save gas.
Right. Well, and if you want to get out into parts that you would adventure in as well, like these folks, and I can't remember who it was, if you follow the link, you'll find who it was. It was some bike shop here in town, I think, that was using this. It was their Instagram. But, if you want to get out in the woods or whatever and you have to use a combustion engine, the motorcycle will use less fuel than a car will. So there's that.
So maybe this this thing in San Antonio, this wagon idea could be
maybe it should be a scooter.
There you go. Swater cycle.
yeah. And then it would be just like training. Like, I mean, a lot of people do that, right?
Sure.
A lot of pro bike racer guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You draft a motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you get chased by the devil. Yeah. El Diablo. All right. Well, this has been a good show. Should we wrap this up?
No headlines today, folks.
No headlines at all. There were headlines. We just didn't talk about them. All right. Here comes a thing.
I'm hearing some music from somewhere.
Yeah.
That's actually my music. I apologize.
Oh,
I didn't turn anything off before
fine.
I came and sat in here.
That's
all
right. Fine. You got these headlines.
I doubt it's coming
through
this
list up.
Anyways. So. Yes, I do.
All right. You want that running start before I play the music?
No, let's try it.
All right. Here you go.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback via email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call or text us at 503-847-9774. Twitter to @sprocketpodcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. Thanks to Herbert for our headline sounder. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katrina Melamgard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Winzinski, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller, Todd Parker, and Scott McAllister Miller.
That's right. Brush your teeth and go to bed.
Go to bed! Oh, I know why.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, there we go. I'm a guest. Look at me guesting.
Good job guesting.
Hey,
wait,
thanks.
Where did I go?
You disappeared.
I did. I'm appearing here, but not here. So, wait for
hang
it.
Hang on to that.
Wait
one.
For it.
Don't tell me now. Tell me later. Now you're in charge.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
Yeah. You'll be all right.
I'll try not to let the power go to my head here.
Yeah. Careful about that. Can you turn on the very last channel? There we go. I'm going to do this again.
This was really down on the sound.
All right.
Third time.
All set? A Sprocket Studios production.